This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Record low Arctic sea ice, record melting of Greenland's glaciers, unprecedented permafrost melting, and more than a million acres burned by wildfires in Alaska. It has been a dramatic summer in the Arctic. And each of these stories has garnered headlines this summer, but they tend to have been presented as separate events, when in actuality, they are all part of the broader phenomenon of extreme Arctic warming. They are intimately linked to each other and to the rest of the globe. Joining me now to explain how all of this is connected are three climate experts, Jennifer Francis and Sue Natale, both of Woods Hole Research Center, and Twyla Moon of the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you, Heather.
Hi, great to be with you.
Jen, let's start with you and sea ice. In July, we saw Arctic sea ice hit the lowest level on record for the month of July. But if we take this season as a whole, where do we stand at this point?
So as we look back through 2019, even beyond this current melt season, the sea ice has been running at either near record lows or record lows pretty much the entire year. Right now, we're looking very much like we will challenge the previous record low, which was in 2012.
And Twyla Moon, let's turn our attention to Greenland. We've heard a lot of superlatives this summer regarding the melting of glaciers in Greenland. And again, kind of for the whole season, appear to be on track to have lost more ice this year than any other year on record. Give us a sense of what that actually means and what's going on in Greenland this summer.
Yes, it has been an extraordinary year in Greenland, and not in a good sense. We had early melt events in June, and we had a very large melt event just earlier in July. And as you said, that's putting us on track to perhaps set a new record for total ice loss since records have begun in the 1950s. But even looking earlier, we can look at records in the ice sheet itself by taking ice cores. And we can see that, for example, with this event in July, we saw melt occurring at Summit Greenland, which is in the very center of the ice sheet at about 10,000 feet of elevation. And we saw melt there in 2012, just as Jennifer mentioned, that was a record low year for sea ice. That was also our previous record for most loss in a year. Before that, we didn't see melt at Summit Greenland. The last time was 1889, and prior to that, it was 650 years earlier.
And Sue Natale, if we turn our attention to the land in the Arctic and the Alaskan tundra, where you've been out doing field work this summer, permafrost melting, also these unusual lightning storms. And the National Weather Service actually reported on August 10th, not just in Alaska, but about 300 miles from the North Pole, something like 48 lightning strikes. I mean, how unusual is it to see something like lightning storms in the Arctic? And what does that tell us about what's going on there? I mean, you were there for some of those lightning storms, right?
Yeah, I haven't seen many lightning storms, so it was surprising to see them this summer in the tundra. It's not something that we see. It is something that's happening increasingly because of the increases in temperature. The landscape is also getting a bit drier. So when you combine this increase in lightning with drier landscape, you have an increased susceptibility for fire. And at the same time, the fire is burning not just the trees and vegetation above ground, but it's also burning into the soil because there's so much carbon in the soil. And in turn, that's winding up causing an increase in permafrost thaw.
So let's dig into that a little bit, because, of course, that's one of the connections and feedback loops, a major one in the Arctic, that, as you said, there's so much carbon locked up in the soil that as it melts, as it's burned, that can be released, and that can feed into more warming globally.
Yeah, exactly. So because there's so much carbon below ground, it can actually burn in a fire, and it can smolder and burn from one year, continue through the winter, smoldering below ground, and continue burning the next year. Mm. You know, you have that combustion release of carbon, but then you also have long-term impacts because that The organic matter in the ground sort of is like a kind of a cover on a cooler. And when you remove that, you remove the insulation. And so that then allows the ground to thaw more. So it allows the heat in the summertime to get down deeper into the permafrost, causing more thaw. And now you have this pool of organic material that was frozen that now is available for microbes to break down and release more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere.
So that's part of the global phenomenon of climate change. But Jennifer Francis, the Arctic is actually warming, what, 2 to 4 times faster than the rest of the globe. And let's circle back to sea ice, because that's kind of at the heart of why this region would be warming faster than any place else. So what is that feedback loop? What's going on there?
Right. So I like to think of the fact that the sea ice is disappearing as a threat multiplier, both for the Arctic itself and also for the globe. And the reason is because sea ice is very white. It's got snow on top of it generally. And so it's very reflective of the energy from the sun that hits it. So when you lose that sea ice, what it replaces it is very dark ocean. So instead of that energy being reflected back to outer space, it is now going into the climate system. It's going into the Arctic Ocean.
Jennifer Francis, when we think about those mechanisms and these kind of connections and feedback loops, we get a warmer than usual summer. We see more sea ice melting. That exposes more dark water. That contributes to more local warming as well as global. Are we seeing that connection to more melting of Greenland ice, more melting of permafrost within a season? Or when we think about these feedback loops and these connections, are we really talking about, you know, a decadal scale or something longer?
I think the answer to that is yes. I think we're seeing them
above
on both timescales, yes. Right now, if you look at an analysis of the temperatures of the open water in the Arctic around Alaska, around Greenland, and see how those temperatures are different from normal, it looks like the place is on fire. The colors are all red. It's much, much warmer than normal all around Alaska, where the ice has retreated. It's very warm all around Greenland as well, which is contributing to those rapid melt events that Twyla just talked about. And so we're seeing that happen in real time, but there's also a memory to the system. So not all of that heat will leave the ocean this season. It'll get trapped. It'll emerge gradually over this coming winter even, and maybe even stay in there some of it into the next season.
I mean, if you take all of this together, it's a lot. And it sounds like the Arctic is literally falling apart. I mean, it's kind of melting and coming apart at the seams. And that has, as you've highlighted, ramifications of all sorts in the Arctic, but also for us here in terms of our weather, in terms of sea level rise and global warming. And I would love to hear from each of you how you kind of cope with this knowledge. Is there any reason for hope or optimism, and what can be done?
So there are a couple of silver linings to this cloud, and I like to focus on silver linings. One of them is that these changes that we're observing in the Arctic are so huge that you don't need an instrument to detect them. You can show them to people, the public, to policymakers, to journalists, and it's obvious that these changes are happening really rapidly. We know exactly why they're happening. There's no other explanation other than the fact that we're adding all these greenhouse gases to the atmosphere and the globe is warming, which is causing these three types of what used to be permanent ice types in the Arctic to unravel or disintegrate, as you said.
I'm waiting for the silver lining.
You're wondering, yes. So the silver lining is that it's a wonderful communication tool to get the public to understand that climate change is happening today. It's happening right now, and that we can make these connections to what's happening elsewhere in the climate system, things like sea level rise, things like changes in weather patterns. So I think the public is starting to get the picture that, okay, this is a big problem now. We have to step up and act. I think we're seeing a lot more action taking place all around the country, not so much in Washington, but definitely at local and state levels, and certainly in other countries around the world. So that is one of my main silver linings.
Okay, so it is so dramatic and so severe that maybe it could shock us into realization. Sue Natale, does that mean it's also too late to do anything? What do we do with that realization then that this is happening and it's really that severe?
Yeah, so I guess my hope is found in knowledge, because with knowledge you can take action, and taking action sooner rather than later means that there'll be less severe consequences. Some permafrost will thaw because it's already thawing, but we can greatly reduce the extent of how much permafrost thaws by increasing the urgency of our action through fossil fuel reduction and natural climate solutions. So, you know, one example is projections of, you know, just how much permafrost will thaw. They range somewhere between 40% and 70% by the end of this century. And that big difference between 40% and 70% has to do with our fossil fuel emissions. So we can have a 70% loss of permafrost or thawing of the permafrost if we take no action, or we can have just cut that almost in half if we take action and reduce our fossil fuel emissions abruptly. So in that, I find some hope. There will be changes for sure because we're already seeing them, but we can greatly reduce the impacts.
And Twyla Moon, I was actually just reading about some of the psychological and mental health impacts of the extreme melting in Greenland for residents of Greenland, how people in Greenland are feeling right now, and it's not good. Where do you find hope or optimism, and do you see reason for hope or optimism?
Absolutely. I think this is a critical issue, and I'm really glad we're talking about it. I call this getting lost in the climate blues. And you can imagine that with my work, it might be easy to do. But the thing that I think folks can realize now is that the changes that are happening in the Arctic, they can feel very far away, but we can now recognize that all of these changes we've talked about together have been fundamentally caused by human action. But the good news is that the future of these changes will also be fundamentally determined by human action. So we can be really active players in what the future holds. And I don't want individuals to get lost in a sense of hopelessness, for example, that we're not having enough action on the federal level right now. And instead, think about what each of us as individuals can contribute to having a major change. So I called up my utility company and said, hey, I want to get all my energy from wind energy. It cost me a few cents extra for my kilowatt. It took me 20 minutes to sign up, and I'm taking a direct impact. And people can talk to their friends, their families, school and community groups about switching to solar or wind energy, or just telling their representatives that they think that climate change is an important issue and we should be talking about the solutions and we should be talking about action. And I know for myself, the act of being proactive, talking with people, communicating on this, taking actions in my own life really gives me a sense that this is something that we can address locally, regionally, nationally, and globally. And I think it especially for Americans, we are a country that really has an ethos of creating new horizons and being innovative and being active and forward moving. And I think turning towards thinking about those solutions from an individual scale on up is a great way to pull ourselves out of the kind of the tough news that we're often hearing about climate change.
That's Twyla Moon of the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Twyla, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Also with me, Jennifer Francis and Sue Natale, both of the Woods Hole Research Center. Thanks to you guys.
Thank you very much, Heather.